Welcome back to the Sim Geeks Podcast. We are your host, William Belkin, David Shablock. We are joined today by the Society for Simulations Certification Board, and I'm going to let them correct me on that title here in a second. But we're here with Rachel Arujo, who was with us last year doing a similar talk, and John Alex, who's the incoming board chair. Is that the correct title? All right.
It is.
So, John, why don't you take a minute, introduce yourself, and then we'll let Rachel reintroduce herself from last year.
All right. Well, thanks for having us. First of all, my name is John Alex. I'm an emergency physician, and I'm the medical director of the Riverside Simulation Training Lab in Newport News, Virginia.
Yeah, thank you. Rachel Arujo, the director of certification for SSH, second year. So old hat at this now, as some might say.
So Rachel, I mean, you know, last year we went through, kind of talked about certification, why it was important, what that process looked like, as well as your background. What's changed? What's happened in the last 12 months that the world needs to know about?
Oh, the biggest change is we have completed the job task analysis for both the CHSE and CHSOS programs.
And so for everybody listening, what does that mean?
Oh, the practice analysis. Oh, it's so fun. So it happens every 5 to 7 years. We have to have it that way for our NCCA guidelines to be accredited. So not only is it standard best practice in testing, we would not be accredited if we didn't do this. SSH likes to be a gold star shining example of the certification world, so we make sure it happens every 5 years, just to make sure all new changes, fun things are captured. What we do is kind of interview all simulationists all over the world and ask them, what are the core elements of your practice? And we turn that into the blueprint for the exams. So we make sure that we're testing things that are up to date, that are relevant, and that reflect actual practice.
And that's really important because it keeps everything current. Just like Rachel said, you know, we're testing what people are actually doing, what's at the forefront. You know, healthcare, simulation, all this stuff changes so quickly, technology. And when you're talking about these exams, you really need to try and keep up. And so that's why something like this job analysis is so important.
So, like, everybody hears that the blueprints changed. The blueprints changed. Oh, my God. What are we going to do? It's so different now. So, like, it's all new, right? It's stuff you've never heard of, and it's super scary. Now you have new books you have to study, right?
Oh, completely.
Oh, yeah.
Completely not. So we never start from scratch for the practice analysis. That would drive me insane. It would drive our testing vendor insane. It's not smart to start from scratch in any project, right? So we take the existing blueprint and work from there. What has changed? What is no longer relevant? What needs to be added that's new? And that's kind of an ongoing process. So if you were studying on the old blueprint, the new one, you're not going to see a lot of changes. You'll see we added a DE&I thing just to be kind of aware of it. It's very important. And then distance learning, we're all doing that. Everyone's already been doing it. It should have been on the blueprint, you know, when COVID happened. So nothing new that they've never heard of and is super scary, I promise.
But definitely all relevant content. So yeah, just like Rachel said, everything that you've been studying is the right stuff to study. But anything that's new on the front, you know, on the forefront, particularly the DEI, which is really important, is included. So
it's a lot of the stuff you already know, you're already studying, just with a few caveats. That's not going to make or break. So like, if you're studying the old blueprint, you want to update, you want to look, but it's 90. I mean, I'm not going to make you percentage. You're a numbers person, but it is a lot of the same content. So don't be scared of it. Just get out there and do it.
And like I said last year when we talked, I am not a total jerk. So we're not going to front load the new exams with the new content. Like, that would be cruel and unusual punishment. So you're not going to sit for your exam and have 50 distance learning questions. You might see one. We gradually introduce that new content. We introduce it in a zero-weighted pretest position, see how the stats come back on it, see how it performs. If it's good, then it gets to be a scored question that will help determine pass-fail status.
And so I'm going to tell you how I approached it, because this is mentally how I had to do it, is there are so many, and you know the numbers. There is, say, like 100 questions that are the actual questions, and then there's 15 that are the test questions.
Yeah.
So mentally what I did was, if I'm taking the test and I'm like, I have no freaking clue, I'm going to fail this one, mentally I assign that must be a test question. But, you know, you got to do whatever you got to do to keep pushing through. Don't let this scare you.
And this might be my, like, witchy woo-woo vibe that I have about me, but part of the success is that positive mental attitude. So if you tell yourself, like, I don't know this, but it's going to be okay and I'm going to move on, and you keep that positive attitude through the exam, you will do better on the exam.
I agree. You know, the sun, no matter what, tomorrow the sun will go up mm-hmm. and life will go on. Mm-hmm. And if you did not pass, you know what? Just refocus. You've got a really good snapshot, an accurate snapshot of what the test looks like. Mm-hmm. So you know what I probably didn't do right.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't overthink it like every single person in simulation, including me.
Oh, I know. It's so hard to turn off that simulationist brain where you're like, what are they not saying that I think they're saying? Don't do that when taking a test.
Yeah, don't read too much into the questions. But, you know, the other thing that I think is great about the blueprints and taking the test in general is so much of what we do in simulation is on-the-job training. And I think the blueprint helps focus you in and also expose you to things that you may not have gotten on the job. And so now you're learning more while you're prepping for a certification.
And that's a really good point is, yeah, you will expand your knowledge base, which only helps you.
Right.
The major analysis behind us with the test changes kind of in play at this point, what are you guys looking to do next? What do we see for the next 12 months? Do we slowly adjust that test and see where it sits, or what's your next big project you guys are right on to?
So I know I said I wasn't a total jerk, and now I'm taking it back.
There are degrees of totality.
The next project we'll be doing this February is our standard setting process. So right now we are not releasing scores for the exam that just launched yesterday.
I just saw a post going, I have to wait 5-6 weeks. Oh my God. Yeah, right now you do.
Yep. But it's a really beneficial and a really, really fun process. So what we do is we look at all of the candidate data, the impact data that comes in, how people performed on the items. And then we get a group of subject matter experts who are certified to go through each item and provide a difficulty rating to each item, how difficult they think each item is. And then we combine actual candidate data, difficulty data, find that midpoint, and we use that to put the cut, determine the cut of the exam. So we really important to get all that actual candidate data in when determining the pass point, because it's actual candidates that are taking the exam, right? So once we have that pass point established, we equate to that continuing forward for the next five forms over the next 5 years. So every time a new exam form is launched, it's equated to that point. So we make sure we have a standardized difficulty no matter what form of the exam you see.
So to break that down, if you know you're launching a new test question, and if everybody failed it, you'd want to know, we got to look at that, or why. And mm-hmm. that's kind of what you're saying is, you got to look at that and go, okay, 75% of people failed this question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at where, why, and how.
Exactly, and I'm really glad that Rachel delved into this, because I don't know about you guys, but from my perspective, as I was taking these tests before I joined the certification council, I had no idea how much went into developing these tests and these questions. And so it really lends some credibility to the research, the data, the process behind developing these tests, and so that they are valid and they are testing what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the best things about doing this interview last year, is it gave everybody kind of a window into, you know, they're not just big scary people that hate you, this is okay. And we hoped it broke it down so that more people went out and took the test. So that's what we're wanting again this year, is it's not this big, you know, 400-pound gorilla. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's more cuddly gorilla.
Yeah. I mean, I am big and scary, but I don't hate anyone. My passion is fair testing, fairness in testing. If, we're looking into new things in our neurodivergent candidate population, and what can we allow people to have in test centers that were not allowed before, but could help, like, you know, just gum or like a fidget thing or something to help people that, you know, they're not using that to cheat, let them have it.
Yeah, talking about the accommodations, that's something else we spend a lot of time discussing as a council, to figure out what can be provided that isn't, you know, giving anyone a leg up on the test. And there's a lot of options out there, there really are.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important, too, for a lot of those, kind of remotely proctored exams. They make you take a picture of the whole room that you're in, and then if you look away from the computer for more than 3 seconds, they automatically fail you.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that understanding that not everybody works in that, and that just because I look somewhere else or just because I'm messing with something doesn't mean you're actually cheating, that might be your way of kind of getting through a stressful situation. So I think it's a great conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're definitely working with our vendor to, I don't want to say, like, relax the standard or the remote proctoring, but to allow for more like warnings, again, for like the looking away from the screen, having the proctor prompt and say, hey, you know, this is kind of triggering our systems, and not just auto close someone out for it.
Absolutely.
And that's another great option out there for folks that aren't aware. I mean, the remote testing is still relatively new, and it provides a unique opportunity for folks that can't get to a testing center. Maybe there isn't one conveniently located nearby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that a lot. Is that still available? It was just a COVID thing, right?
Nope.
It's all shut down.
Nope.
So that's still an option.
Absolutely.
Good. And that's not going away.
I mean, while we're on that, what are the options? So, I mean, just go ahead and kind of recap that for those of us, you know, maybe that didn't listen to the last episode. What options do people have as far as taking these computer-based tests or paper and pencil, or what events are they held at, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we are past the age of paper and pencil, so no more paper pencil, no more Scantrons, no more, oh my God, did I bubble this in correctly, or if one line out is going to make it wrong. So it's only computer-based testing, and the two options are at a testing center, where you can go and do the check-in process, all that fun stuff, or the live remote proctoring. So live remote proctoring could be anywhere, anytime that you can take it, but you do have to make sure that your computer requirements meet the requirements of our vendor. And they have checks, like if you sign up for a live remote proctoring exam, they'll send you all of the things to run the software on your computer. And if it's not working, if it's slow, if you're like, oh, this is freaking me out, I can't do it, they will reschedule it, you at a regular testing center.
So there's at least that moment of like, okay, this isn't working, we can do something else. It's not an automatic fail pass situation.
Right, and it's given prior to the exam, like right when you register, so you have time to go through and make sure it works. And, you know, if it doesn't work, maybe use an office computer somewhere.
So where are we going from here? What's the next step? So we got the blueprint in.
Mm-hmm.
We're proving it. You're improving it. You're proving it. And what are some of the next steps?
So lucky for me and my job, because this is easy now for me, we're in the maintenance phase for the certification exams. So the constant every year, checking the stats on items, making sure they're good, replacing outdated ones with new ones, poor performing ones with better performing ones, like that just kind of happens year after year after year. The next practice analysis will be in the next 5 years. I think we'll start it in what? I don't want to think about it. Actually, scratch that.
You just got done with one.
No math in public.
No. Well, it's also a lot of travel for me because we take it international. So I have to travel all the way to Asia and then all the way to Europe and then all the way home. So just not want to think about 18-hour flights right now. We're also looking into new programs now that I'm in maintenance phase and I don't have to worry about the practice analysis. And the two programs that we're kind of focusing on right now, spoiler alert, is a director level.
Good.
Yeah. And a simulation researcher.
Ooh.
I know.
Okay, you got to talk more about that.
Research for simulationists is not research for everybody. It's not a blanket thing. And one of my favorite people, Kim Layton, bless her.
Love the Kim.
She has, she's amazing. So she has pointed out several times of all the mistakes she has seen, but not someone who just doesn't know research. They just don't know research for sim and all the nuances there.
And really what we're trying to do is we're not trying to tease out every single piece of what we do as simulationists, but there are big buckets, if you will, right? And director level administration, that is completely different than SOS or educator. And
yep.
The research component is yet another level where we can get a little unique.
Yeah, I like those two because I never thought of the researcher, but the director I want you to expand on, because that is another thing that, you know, people get voluntold.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're a director. Okay, do all the director things. So do those things. So tell me about the director level one that you're thinking. What you can at this time, I know it's not ready yet.
So, I mean, some of the things you want to capture are things that cross all the boundaries. So as in the educator role, you study some of the administration. In the SOS role, you study some of the administration. But there's a lot more to it. There's budget. There's managing the C-suite. There's return on investment. There's all these things that really need to come together to make a sim center effective and successful. And I think those are
sustainable.
And sustainable, right? So I think those are some of the things that we're hoping to look.
Yes. And you brought up a great point of being voluntold. You know, we've seen it so many times, like, oh, you're so good at, you know, running the sim center and now you're the director. Congratulations. So we're looking at not only a standalone certification for those who have been doing it, but also kicking around the idea of ABCs, assessment-based credentials, that'll have an attachment of a learning module to it for the director level. So we'll have something of an education course like, hey, you got voluntold to be a director. Here's some things we can do to help you. And then you might get a little credential for completing that course.
Nice.
I shouldn't say little. I don't mean to mean diminutive.
No. But, like, it's not a full-on master's PhD.
Right.
So
it's
this
not
is
a full-on certification.
Something that is attainable and acquirable. You can actually do without, you know, 20 years later, oh, I'm finally a director that I've been doing for 20 years.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to, I know you're not ready for it, but if somebody were to say, ooh, I'd like to look into what I need to research, do you know of any resources out there that they could start looking at, or is that still being identified?
It's still being identified.
Okay.
We're in complete survey mode and talking to the population out there.
Very nice.
But that being said, as the call for service comes out, or the call to certified individuals comes out to help with these surveys and help figure out what's important, that is a place where everyone can participate.
And mm-hmm. that's huge, because so right now, anybody that's listening that is a director doing best practices and doing a good job, mm-hmm. when that call for services, don't just ignore that. Jump in. Or you're a researcher and you're passionate about your research, look for these calls for service, because this is the future. It's coming. So you want to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if you have, we're all passionate about what we do.
Yeah.
We are here because we love this. And having that expert knowledge, having that subject matter expert knowledge, our products would be invalidated. It would be garbage without that level of input.
You don't want me doing your research study. I don't know enough about it. It scares the hell out of me, and I want to run the other direction. But I'd love to sit down with somebody who is passionate about it and teach me more.
And then down the road, as you're looking to build your teams, as you know, if these are credentials that come to be, you can help start picking who you need on your team. Who do you want to have on the bench, right?
Yep. So these are definitely the future, and they show a mark of excellence. That's, you know, I think it's important. That's why I have all two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Same. And I think it validates all the hard work that we're doing, and it adds credibility. That's why I feel so strongly about certification.
And why he's the chair.
Well, guys, you know we're here on the floor at SSH, so we're getting up to the end of our time limit with you guys before we bring on our next set of guests the Society's been polite enough to provide us with. Any parting thoughts, John, before we bail?
I think just like we talked about, keep an eye out for those calls for service, and you know there's always an opportunity and a role for everyone in the simulation community to participate, and we could always use the help.
Rachel, anything you want to add?
Get certified.
There you go. Let's do it. It's important. People are looking for it. I'm seeing so many job applications that are actually requiring that in my own company to, you know, go from a level to another level as you need to have it. So it's getting to be more and more important every day. And you know this stuff. Don't let your brain talk you out of this or scare you away from it. You've got this. You can do it. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feel free to email me if you need a pep talk about getting certified. I'm all about it.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming out.
Thank you.
Again, this is 2024 IMSH in San Diego here on the exhibit hall. I'm William Belk.
I'm David Schaublock.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.